Section 2. Heroes of the Regenerative Medicine Revolution. Learn 5 of the most powerful tools for the healing, transformation, and regeneration of the human body, and hear the inspiring stories of the heroes who have created them. These tools and discoveries are the basis of so many treatments you'll read in this book, including The Miracle of Organ Regeneration, The Mighty CAR T-Cell, A Breakthrough Cure for Leukemia, Incisionless Brain Surgery, The Impact of Focused Ultrasound to Heal Parkinson's Symptoms and Even Opioid Addiction, Gene Therapy and the Power of CRISPR, A Potential Cure for Disease, The Wondrous Wnt Pathway, The Ultimate Fountain of Youth. Learn about a breakthrough molecule in phase 3 trials that could literally regrow all your tendons in less than 12 months, eliminating osteoarthritis. Also learn about some of the newest cancer treatment alternatives to traditional chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. Chapter 5. The Miracle of Organ Regeneration. If we keep cars and planes and buildings going forever with continuous maintenance and an unlimited store of parts, why can't we create an unlimited supply of transplantable organs to keep people living indefinitely? Martine Rothblatt, creator of SiriusXM Radio and CEO of United Therapeutics. The decade ahead will be known for many dramatic health advances, but few will be more astonishing or impactful than this one. We may each soon have access to a set of backup organs. Today, the transplant waiting time can be years, which for many people might as well be never. But what if people didn't need to wait for someone to die before they could get a healthy kidney or heart or liver? In this chapter, you'll learn how 5 brilliant scientists and entrepreneurs are taking on this gargantuan challenge as we speak. Here are just a few of their stunning advances. Dead and damaged lungs can now be restored and preserved in good condition for up to 22 hours, enough time for them to be flown out for transplantation, with a 100% success rate. Another stem cell-based platform, 3D printed organs, a 20-year-old technology, is fast advancing from skin and bladders to solid organs like hearts, kidneys, and lungs. The ultimate payoff, projected before the end of this decade, will be an unlimited supply of safe and affordable on-demand transplants, with the finished product available within a month of the order being placed. Humanized, genetically modified pigs could provide more than enough off-the-shelf organs for everyone on the transplant lists, with no risk of viral contamination or a life-threatening immune response. The transplants might even be stronger and more resilient than our original organs. Yet another organ regeneration platform is rebuilding lungs from scratch by combining a pig collagen scaffold with the future recipient's own stem cells. With perfect DNA matching between the patient and the regenerated tissue, there's no chance of rejection and no need for lifetime immunosuppressant drugs. Our lymph nodes can be turned into bioreactors to manufacture mini organs to support or replace diseased originals. On-demand cyborg kidneys, synthetic scaffolds infused with stem cells, can generate normal urine and are targeted to be tested in human patients by 2023. Plus, as you hear this, you'll learn principles that have guided these inspirational scientists to create breakthroughs in areas where the task seemed impossible. As you listen, notice the patterns they use to create these breakthroughs, because you can model their beliefs and actions to solve your own challenges or to achieve goals that might initially seem impossible. I know this all sounds like science fiction, but Dr. Anthony Atala of Wake Forest University has been using stem cells to grow 3D-printed human bladders for almost 20 years now, and there are people today whose lives have been saved and transformed through his work. Most of what you will hear about in this chapter will be coming to the public between the end of 2022 and 2025. So, let's begin the journey. Of all the brilliant people breaking through this frontier, one stands out: Martine Rothblatt, the chairman, CEO, and founder of United Therapeutics, or UT. The quality and scope of Martine's thinking, the depth of her curiosity, the passion of her execution, she just gets to a different level than anyone else. She's become a friend of mine and has been a close friend of Peter Diamandis for more than 30 years. When Peter and I recently caught up with her for an interview, what I learned left me in awe. Listen on, and I'm betting you'll feel the same way. United Therapeutics is changing the game with a multitude of options for life and death organ transplants. For anybody else, that alone would be an impressive life's work, but for Martine, it's just the latest in a long series of odds-defying quests. Years ago, she envisioned a way to connect the whole world to the best in news and music, no matter how remote a listener might be. The result? Satellite radio, now known as Sirius XM. Next, as a lawyer with no pharmaceutical background, Martine drove the discovery of orphan drugs to save the life of her own daughter and thousands of others with once-terminal diseases. She is an author, a lawyer, a helicopter pilot, and a green revolutionary. She has the brain of an engineer and the soul of a philosopher. And what could be more beautiful than that? After living the first half of her life as a male, Martine became the highest-paid female CEO in the United States and the first openly transgender CEO of a public company. To paraphrase Star Trek's old tagline, she goes where no one has gone before. Let me share with you a bit of Martine's amazing personal story, and then I'll explain in more depth the breakthroughs she's making in the field of organ transplants. Why learn more about her? Here's why. There are times when all of us face seemingly insurmountable challenges. Most of us accept these challenges as part of life and do our best to manage our problems or suffering. But then there are people who create solutions and bring them to the world to help others. Martine is one of those. As you listen to the following, I'd ask you to think about the principles she follows to attack and solve the toughest problems. Because as already noted, these same principles will work for you in any area of your life, including your health. You don't have to take my word for this. Forbes put Martine on their list of 100 greatest living business minds, right next to Bezos, Buffett, and Bono. As Inc. magazine claimed, she is breaking glass windows all over the place. Or as legendary futurist Ray Kurzweil put it, Martine has a perfect track record in turning her visions into reality. It's extremely rare to find someone so consistently inspirational across such a wide swath of human endeavor. When I do, I want to figure out what makes them tick. Here are two things I can tell you about Martine. First, she knows no fear, least of all about being wrong. The person who makes no mistakes is making the biggest mistake, she says, because they're just standing still and doing nothing. Second, she's a serial obsessive. And everybody loves it when Martine gets obsessed because it means that life on this earth is about to change for the better. As she told me at the Vatican, the world's biggest problems are the biggest opportunities. Going back to the time when Martine was still Martin Rothblatt, she was already the emperor of moonshots, or what Peter Diamandis calls massively transformative purposes. From a very young age, she realized that it wasn't crazy to think you could do something that had never been done before. As I've always taught, if you want new answers, you've got to ask new questions, and to ask them with the certainty that they need to be answered. Martine embodies that principle to a T. At every step, she's been dismissed by those in the know. But she shows us that no matter what anybody tells you, no matter how many roadblocks get thrown in your path, you keep digging until you reach your destination. You go full tilt. You liquidate doubt. You do not waver. Better than just about anyone I've ever met, Martine rejects what I call the tyranny of how. When most people have a dream or goal, they get excited until they start to confront how they're going to achieve it. Since they don't yet know how, they get demoralized. They lose the sense of certainty that breakthroughs require. Soon they stop trying, they give up. But Martine never gets discouraged by logistics. When something that matters is on the line, she decides that she'll find the solution, even if all the engineering details and logistics aren't quite ready for prime time. Does that make sense to you too? I hope so, because no matter what your ambition may be, it's that kind of resolve and absolute persistence that fuels success. What is Martine obsessed about these days? What's driving her every living, breathing moment? Try this one on for size. A world of organs on demand where no one will ever need to die for the lack of a working lung, liver, kidney, or heart. Martine's certainty never wavers. Persistence is omnipotence, she says. If you don't give up, you will succeed. Organ regeneration is a fascinating field. It's literally sci-fi in the flesh. But before we dive into it, I want to tell you a little more about the person whose unflinching determination is making it happen today in real time. Truth and technology will triumph over bullshit and bureaucracy. Rene Anselmo, founder of Pan Am Sat, the first privately held international satellite communications enterprise in the U.S. Martine grew up feasting on the science fiction of Arthur C. Clarke, the godfather of satellite communications. In the 1970s, as an adventurous 19-year-old taking a break from college, she traveled to the Seychelles, islands off East Africa where NASA had installed a tracking station for deep space missions. After climbing a mountain for a peek at the gigantic dish, she had a full-blown epiphany. It was like we stepped into the future. She began going to bed each night saying, if it's the last thing I'm going to do in my entire life, I'm going to connect the world with satellites. Flash forward a few years. Martine had her law and MBA degrees from UCLA with a focus on space law and finance. She joined Gerard K. O'Neill, the visionary Princeton physics professor, as CEO of Geostar, a vehicular tracking system, an early version of today's GPS. Martine's big idea was that the same signals that tracked trucks and planes could also transmit sound. She'd spent too many hours on country back roads searching in vain for a jazz station, or, even more frustrating, having one fade into a dead zone just as one of her favorite artists came on. Then it came to her. Why couldn't satellites be used to broadcast radio? Why couldn't listeners the world over get access to hundreds of crystal-clear channels from anywhere they could see the sky? Why shouldn't people in Omaha or Reno get the same programming we take for granted in New York or D.C. or San Francisco? Martine is an engineer at heart. If you can't make it or build it, I'm not that interested in it. She did the math and knew her idea could work. As satellites kept getting bigger and more powerful, they'd be able to beam a signal to a flat little plate embedded into the roof of an automobile. That was the genesis of Sirius Satellite Radio, now Sirius XM. In our interview, Martine made it clear how this vision met her three criteria for a legitimate moonshot. 1. The goal, in this case a global satellite radio service, could realistically be accomplished within a decade. 2. It had the potential to transform society. My idea was to broadcast dozens of channels of content people can't get any other way into every city and town in North America, to 10x blow the limit away. 3. It was something that probably 99% of the population thought was impossible. It wasn't easy, it never is, when you're doing something original. Martine ran up against doubters at every turn. First, there were the experts who insisted that satellite radio signals could never reach a small planar antenna from more than 20,000 miles from Earth's surface, not if they had to pass through trees or get around tall buildings. Remember, this was before cell phones or a commercial internet. Then there were the skeptics who said the Federal Communications Commission would never assign its valuable frequencies to an unproven satellite system. That included the National Association of Broadcasters, the terrestrial radio lobby. They were terrified of new competition and wanted to monopolize the frequencies for their electronic news-gathering trucks. But Sirius aced the technology. In 1997, 7 years after Martine founded the company, it received its FCC license. Still, the naysayers weren't done. There wasn't any market for subscription radio, they said. Who would pay for music and news and sports when they could get AM or FM for free? But as it turned out, lots of people were ready to pay, especially after Howard Stern brought his show into the fold. Today, Sirius XM counts more than 30 million subscribers. As Martine shared with me at one of my business mastery seminars, she's met hundreds of people from all walks of life, from all corners of the country, who say that her brainchild helps them get through each and every day. She's been hugged by women in the most isolated places who can now connect to heartwarming talk media and a smorgasbord of musical genres. Thanks to over-the-air academic coursework, her pioneering technology enabled young people in India to get accepted to top universities. She extended SiriusXM to Africa and Asia via related companies and additional satellites. Martine is always gratified to hear these stories, but she wasn't surprised by SiriusXM's success, because she knew how much power and momentum a moonshot can generate. As she told me, "You can construct the reality you desire when you have your massively transformative purpose. You know you're going to win before you actually win." The beautiful thing about the human mind is it's like a quantum computer. It can take in so much information and then just collapse into a solution right away. Martine Rothblatt. Sirius was still getting off the ground when its creator launched another transformation, a personal one. Because Martine wasn't yet Martine, she was still Martin Rothblatt, though she'd long felt at odds with her label as a male. She'd bottled up her female side. "I was super sensitive to not wanting to be laughed at, not wanting to be bullied, not wanting to lose all my friends." Only Bina, her wife and soulmate, knew the truth. Before changing her name and gender, Martine consulted each of their four children. She gave each of them a veto. If they didn't want her to make the transition, she wouldn't go through with it. All four supported her choice. Genesis, just 7 years old, pierced to the heart of it. "I love my dad, and she loves me." It was around that time that Martine and Bina noticed something not right with their youngest child. On a family ski trip in Telluride, Colorado, Genesis' energy flagged and her lips kept turning blue. Back home, she had to be carried upstairs to her bedroom. They went to doctor after doctor, and no one could say what was wrong. At the Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., they found out that Genesis had a rare and highly dangerous disease, pulmonary arterial hypertension. A narrowing of the arteries in her lungs was constricting her blood flow, straining her heart to pump hard enough. Her body was being starved of oxygen. Over the next couple of years, the doctors told them their daughter's heart muscle would weaken. Soon, it would fail. Martine will never forget that day. "I said to the doctor, 'Surely there must be a cure.' But there was no cure. 'Surely there must be a treatment.' There was none, at least none that was safe and reliable." The lead physician, a specialist at the pinnacle of his profession, told them, "Every kid I've seen with this disease has died." Genesis was 10 years old and might have 3 years to live, 5 if she was lucky. Of course, she'd be added to the lung transplant list, but there were so few organs available, especially for children, that her chances were slim and none. Martine was devastated, but far from defeated, because that was the day she set in motion her next moonshot, to rescue her daughter. By then, she knew the most critical attribute for any successful entrepreneur: total immersion and single-minded obsession. She'd absorbed how to be able to twist that focus lens on your camera and everything else fades to a blur and you're just targeting on what you have to do. "I had to save Genesis. Nothing else mattered." Martine stepped down as Sirius CEO. She put her life's great ambition and achievement behind her for something more urgent. She sold a chunk of her Sirius shares, established a foundation, and funded 10 leading doctors to find a cure for pulmonary hypertension. 6 months later, none of them had made a dent. Genesis was falling down and fainting, spending more nights in the hospital than out of it. Martine ran out of patience. There had to be a solution, and she would find it herself. We're lucky to live in a time when anyone can become an expert in almost any subject, providing you know how to read and are willing to put in the effort. Martine decided to become an expert in pulmonary hypertension. It was the intellectual equivalent, she says, of the mother lifting up a Volkswagen to save her trapped child underneath a wheel. With Genesis in tow, Martine trekked to the libraries at Children's National Medical Center and the National Institutes of Health. She read biology, physiology, anatomy, biochemistry, one book after the next. The more she learned, the more confident she became that she'd somehow find a way to treat this untreatable disease. Once again, the skeptics turned out in force. Martine had no training in the field, the top professionals kept reminding her. If an effective medicine was out there, wouldn't the real scientists have already found it? And even if she somehow stumbled onto something, pulmonary hypertension was so rare that no one would invest in it. Where would the profits come from? Who would turn a scientific solution into a commercial product? Fortunately, Martine has a theory that kept her afloat. When you do something big and bold, it takes 99 no's to get to yes. And you need to welcome and embrace those no's, because every one of them is one step closer to that yes. As she says, if you believe in what you do, you've just got to be persistent. After months of digging, she struck gold in an unlikely spot, an article in an obscure journal about a drug developed to treat heart failure. The drug was a total bust, but it had an intriguing side effect. It reduced blood pressure between the heart and lungs, but nowhere else, which happened to be exactly what Martine was looking for. She went to the developer, Glaxo Welcome, now GlaxoSmithKline, and asked to buy their mysterious molecule. Three times they slammed the door in her face. The drug had been tried exclusively in congestive heart failure, and Glaxo didn't think it would work in pulmonary hypertension. Besides, they weren't about to license a failed medicine to a non-scientist. Finally, they had only a small amount of the drug left past its expiration date. A possibly life-saving treatment for Genesis was sitting abandoned in a freezer, and that's where it would stay. A big bunch of no's, in short. That's where another one of Martine's favorite sayings came in handy. Identify the corridors of indifference and run down them like hell. She needed credentials? Okay, she would get them. She recruited a team of doctors for downfield blocking and gradually wore Glaxo down. They agreed to license worldwide rights of the drug for $25,000 and 10% of any revenues it brought in, which they assumed would amount to zero. When the deal was done, they handed Martine a small amount of powder in a Ziploc bag with a patent recipe that perplexed the first several dozen chemists she consulted. But as you know by now, Martine doesn't take no for an answer. She ran down a retired pharmacologist, James Crowe, who thought he could make it work. In 1996, less than 2 years after Genesis was diagnosed, they founded United Therapeutics. 6 years after that, around the time that Martine earned her PhD in medical ethics, they had an FDA-approved drug called Remodulin that proved all the naysayers wrong, she says. The moonshot had landed. Remodulin wasn't a perfect drug. It had a short half-life and patients had to wear a bulky infusion pump around the clock. But it helped many of them stay alive, including Martine's daughter. United Therapeutics later developed an inhalable version and then a pill, Orinitramp. Martine Rowe spelled backwards. Genesis is now 36 years old and living a full life as United Therapeutics telepresence and digital director. Meanwhile, the worthless powder that Martine licensed for $25,000 now generates more than $1.5 billion a year in revenue. Clinical trials have proven that it reduces morbidity and mortality due to pulmonary hypertension. In short, it has radically changed the outlook for this dreaded disease. Before United Therapeutics made this breakthrough drug available, only 2,000 people with pulmonary hypertension were alive in the entire U.S. The fatality rate was that high. Today, thanks to this new treatment, more than 50,000 people are managing the condition, the vast majority enjoying normal lives. If they can't afford the price of the drug, United Therapeutics provides it for free. As Martine says, that's a whole stadium of people who are living, not dying, with pulmonary hypertension. Beautiful people who have gone on to have children, to run for mayor, to become snowboard champions, you name it. Quite a success story, right? You might call it a happy ending. Except that Martine was nowhere close to finished. UT's suite of medicines slowed the progression of pulmonary hypertension, but they didn't stop it. For some, like Genesis, the results were dramatic. For others, including some of her daughter's close friends, there was only a brief reprieve before the end. Even today, 3,000 Americans die of pulmonary hypertension every year. For them, and for anyone with other end-stage lung diseases like emphysema or COPD, there is no pharmaceutical cure. But there is a solution. All it took was another moonshot. Replacement lungs. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. Your playing small does not serve the world. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Marianne Williamson. 1 million people in the United States today have an end-stage organ disease. More than 100,000 are on wait lists for transplants, mainly for kidneys and hearts. Many thousands die each year before their names come up. As humanity lives longer and cars get safer, reducing the number of donor organs after traffic accidents, the shortage keeps growing more acute. Even with 6 of 10 U.S. adults registered as organ donors, the demand far outstrips the supply. It's especially dire for people with end-stage lung disease, which steals 250,000 lives each year. In 2019, there were all of 2,714 lung transplants. The chances of a person who needed a lung getting one was barely 1%. Those odds made no sense to Martine. She threw down the gauntlet at her 2015 TED Talk. If we keep cars and planes and buildings going forever with continuous maintenance and an unlimited store of parts, why can't we create an unlimited supply of transplantable organs to keep people living indefinitely? After all, you don't trash your car when you blow out a tire. You don't tear down your home when you need a new roof. If billions of people have naturally manufactured organs since time immemorial, not to mention all the animals in the animal kingdom, then why can't we do it too? The concept of synthetic organs violated no known laws of physics. At its root, Martine thought it was simply one more engineering problem. Lungs are fragile and complex pieces of anatomy. When a registered donor dies, the vast majority of lungs are ruled out by infectious or degenerative disease. Among the few that make the first cut, 80% become filled with mucus and other fluids, ruined by the process of death. Like the placentas salvaged by Bob Hariri, these precious gifts of life were being thrown into the trash. But Martine had another strategy to increase the number of healthy lungs available for transplantation. Building on the work of Dr. Shaf Khashoggi, a surgeon at Toronto General Hospital, United Therapeutics established the world's first centralized lung restoration facility in Silver Spring, Maryland. They began taking dead organs that had been rejected for transplantation because of their poor condition and pumping in special solutions to revive them under a glass dome that acted like an artificial body, where they could last for up to 22 hours. Toxic fluids and bacteria were flushed out. Tears were repaired. Once a lung was stabilized, a bronchoscope sent real-time video to surgeons around the U.S. If the organ met their standards, it got cold-packed and flown out for transplantation. In every single case that a surgeon remotely accepted a lung, according to Martine, the patients walked out of the hospital. "I've met these people," she says. "They're enormously grateful. They take me in their garage full of oxygen tanks and they say, 'We don't need these anymore.'" This technique, ex vivo lung perfusion, or EVLP, had been tried before, but never at the scale of United Therapeutics and its lung bioengineering PBC subsidiary. To date, the Maryland Center, a second UT branch at the Mayo Clinic campus in Jacksonville, Florida, and similar facilities elsewhere have saved many hundreds of patients. One of them is Heather Leverington, a former 5-time national collegiate shot put champion. By 2010, after a bout with lupus, she had begun needing oxygen to get through the day. 2 years later, on a flight to Spain with her husband, she passed out. The diagnosis? pulmonary hypertension. She had a very, very aggressive case and blew through our medicines, Martine said. They were not able to slow down the disease. While she was still a young woman in her 30s, Heather's outlook seemed grim. In 2016, about to lose hope, Heather received a call from a hospital in Pittsburgh. Would she be willing to join a United Therapeutics clinical trial and try a transplant with EVLP lungs? They didn't have to ask her twice. After the UT team revived a matched pair of lungs from a 28-year-old donor, Heather's 12-hour surgery was a resounding success. A year later, Heather won the gold medal in the shot put at the U.S. Transplant Games. Soon after, she became pregnant and gave birth to a healthy baby, which isn't generally possible for people with pulmonary hypertension. Her disease was effectively cured. Xenotransplantation, off-the-shelf organs. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. Margaret Mead. One of the big impediments for any moonshot is that human beings aren't wired for super long-term objectives. Martine makes her magic happen by turning moonshots into a series of earthshots, tangible, practical, bite-sized milestones that can be reached within a year or so. She chunks things down. Then I carefully stack these one-year sub-projects, she says, and at the end of 10 years we have something that seems miraculous. For UT's moonshot to create an unlimited supply of transplantable organs, EVLP was their first earthshot, but by no means their final act. The more challenging a technology, Martine says, the more careful you have to be about hedging your bets. It's like diversifying a wealth portfolio among various asset classes. For maximum security, it's wiser to spread those eggs around in more than one basket. United Therapeutics has put Tiger teams to work on at least 4 different platforms for organ regeneration. These groups compete with one another and cooperate toward the larger goal at the same time. One frustration with EVLP is that the organs don't always get to patients in time. After a terrible car crash, say, or when a U.S. soldier in a battle theater steps on a mine. The process relies on other people dying sudden and untimely deaths. It's unreliable, to say the least. And Martine wondered, why can't we build a pipeline of off-the-shelf organs to be ready at an hour's notice? One solution may be found in the humble pig, in an interspecies xenotransplant. By a fluke of nature, the organs of an adult pig are close to the size and shape of their human equivalents. Chimpanzees might be even closer, but they're a protected species. In the case of heart valves, where a tight fit is all important, porcine, pig, donors are already used for human patients. Americans eat about 130 million pigs a year. Just 1% of that total would more than meet the country's entire demand for replacement organs. But there's a catch. Vicious, hyperacute rejection. Within hours, if not minutes, of a xenotransplant, pig organs provoke a massive and destructive immune response in humans, far more so than an organ from another person. For Martine, the problem was a thrilling opportunity. Why couldn't genetic engineering delete the pig proteins that trigger rejection? Why not humanize the pig? She teamed up with Craig Venter, the master of genomic sequencing, and invested in research on editing pig genomes with CRISPR, a relatively new but proven technology, what Time magazine calls by far the most precise set of molecular tools to cut, paste, copy, and move genes around. You'll learn about the power of CRISPR and gene therapy in Chapter 9. The partnership discovered that a 10-gene pig, an animal with a mere 10 problem genes knocked out or replaced by human DNA, could do the trick. As Martine told the TED assembly, this wasn't rocket science. It was straightforward engineering, taking on one gene at a time, not so different than her step-by-step approach in launching a communications satellite. The pigs are modified at a Virginia-based UT subsidiary called Revivicor, a spin-off of the British company that made Dolly the sheep, the first mammalian clone. In 2017, Martine's company agreed to fund university-based xenotransplantation programs for pig hearts, kidneys, and lungs. Before long, in preclinical trials, baboon recipients were setting survival records. By 2018, at the University of Munich, they were lasting more than 6 months. FDA approval for human trials may not be far off. At the University of Alabama at Birmingham, researchers hope to transplant pig kidneys into human adults and pig hearts into struggling newborn children, if only to buy them more time before human organs become available. "We've got a Chevy," says Devin Eckhoff, the former director of UAB's breakthrough program. "We may even have a BMW now. Do we wait for a Ferrari? There's a point where you just have to give it a test drive." Martine is aiming to kick off clinical trials for xenokidneys by 2023. "I know folks needing kidneys I'm trying to save, and for xeno hearts by 2025. She's confident that pig organ transplants for human patients will be an FDA-approved reality before the 2020s are out. "What most people thought was impossible, they're now realizing is inevitable." If you're wondering how fast this can happen, I'll give you a clue. As I was doing the final edits to this chapter, I received a text from Martine. "Tony, as promised at your Palm Beach Business Mastery event," with a link to two reports, one from ABC News and the other from the New York Times, reporting a breaking news story of the first time a pig kidney was transplanted into a human without triggering an immediate rejection and in fact looked like a normal kidney the following day. The procedure was done at NYU Langone Health in New York City and is the fruition of Martine's work developed by United Therapeutics. This experiment has shattered yet another obstacle in the way of organ transplant shortage, and researchers are already thinking of implications in other organ systems like skin and heart valves. Thanks to the work of eGenesis, an ambitious startup spun out of the Harvard lab of legendary geneticist and our life force advisor George Church, PhD, FDA approval no longer seems like such a long shot. The company's co-founder, Luhan Yang, figured out a way to make 62 simultaneous genetic edits in the pig genome, enough to strip away all of the viruses that normally reside in the genome and could possibly infect people after a transplant. The company recently tested its virus-free pig organs in primates at Massachusetts General with impressive results. The primates survived for 9 months post-transplant, with a clear path to reaching more than a year. Other superstar scientists are attacking the problem from other angles. At the Salk Institute in California, under Juan Carlos Ispasua Belmonte, researchers are working to cultivate human organs inside pigs via human stem cells. According to James Markman, Mass General's chief of transplant surgery, "Everybody sees that we're at a turning point." As The Atlantic noted, "Routine pig-to-human transplants could truly transform healthcare beyond simply increasing the supply. Organs could go from a product of chance, someone young and healthy dying unexpectedly, to the product of a standardized manufacturing process. Organ transplants would no longer have to be emergency surgeries requiring planes to deliver organs and surgical teams to scramble at any hour. Organs from pigs can be harvested on a schedule and surgeries planned for exact times during the day. A patient that comes in with kidney failure could get a kidney the next day, eliminating the need for large dialysis centers. Hospital ICU beds will no longer be taken up by patients waiting for a heart transplant." Like Martine, Dr. Church's company, eGenesis, is also working to solve the organ shortage crisis with modified pig organs. eGenesis is focusing first on kidneys and pancreatic islet cells, though heart, lungs, and livers won't be far behind. But Church is ready to take this revolution one step further. "We're looking to create enhanced organs to produce something that is better than we have in the body," he says. Dr. Church imagines organs that can fend off bacterial or viral infections or the deterioration of aging. "Some people might have issues with this kind of human engineering, but if it means getting lungs as strong as Michael Phelps or a heart like Usain Bolt's, why not?" We're doing this by making pigs more human-like from a molecular standpoint, making them immune-tolerant and eliminating the internal retroviruses in the pigs, says Church. We call them Pig 3.0, and we've already produced 2,000 of these animals for preclinical primate organ transplant trials. The primates receiving the donor organs are surviving over 300 days thus far at Massachusetts General Hospital. It hopefully won't be very long before we switch from the primates to clinical human trials. Though Martine shares the growing excitement over xenotransplants, she's also pursuing preclinical trials with parallel options. Even after a pig organ is humanized, she points out, it can provoke the same long-term rejection issues as transplants from people. In other words, recipients would still need immunosuppressant drugs for the rest of their lives. Beyond some unpleasant side effects, these medications can open the door to infections or cancer. For non-emergency end-stage scenarios where patients have a year or more to find a life-saving replacement, United Therapeutics is working on a third platform, building organs from scratch using the patient's own stem cells for tissue regeneration. Here's how it works. They start with a donor pig's lungs and strip out all the living cells. What's left is the structural framework, a scaffold of collagen, the basic protein building block for most human tissues and organs. The beautiful thing about collagen, no matter its source, is that it's non-reactive. It causes zero immune response or rejection. Next, the scaffold is recellularized with either billions of human lung-type cells or the recipient's own induced pluripotent stem cells, or iPSCs, which you might recall from Chapter 2. Derived from adult skin cells, an iPSC is reprogrammed to mimic an embryonic stem cell. It then follows instructions to become whatever type of tissue is needed. Or, as Martine explains, you can turn it back in time to becoming a stem cell, and then you can roll it back forward specifically to be a cardiac cell or an alveolar cell for the lung. Since the replacement organ would match the recipient's DNA, no immunosuppressants would be needed. The last time we checked, UT's assembly line was churning out 500 humanized lung scaffolds per year. The iPSC approach is a huge step toward personalized regenerative medicine. But in Martine's big picture, it's just one more Earth shot. Her ultimate moonshot involves on-demand organs that will be custom-designed start to finish. Easily scalable, the technology will make conventional transplants obsolete.
3D printed organs. If you're a maker, you've got to make it until you break it, and then you've got to make it till it's better than that, until it's flawless, and then you're making millions of them. Martine Rothblatt. The first 3D printed prosthetics came out in 2010. Since then, scientists have created 3D bioprinted skin for burn victims. They've crafted functional retinas, the part of your eye that takes in all visual information. They've manufactured bionic ears that can pick up sounds outside the range of normal human hearing. At the Wake Forest Institute for Regenerative Medicine, pioneering tissue researcher and engineer Dr. Anthony Atala has been using stem cells to 3D print human bladders and save lives for nearly 20 years. He is now leading research to bioprint complex tissues and organs from cartilage to kidneys. It's all done with machines not so different than the inkjet printer in your home office, except they're the size of a refrigerator. Though Atala and others previously did similar work by hand, 3D bioprinted tissues and organs are a huge leap forward for affordability, consistency, and precision. The final frontier for 3D bioprinting, the most difficult challenges of all, are solid organs like hearts, kidneys, livers, and lungs. They have dense concentrations of cells, 240 billion in the liver alone, enormous structural complexity, and super high requirements for oxygen and blood supply. The time frame for this achievement is usually estimated in decades, but Martine is in a hurry, as usual. In partnership with the world's leading 3D printing company, 3D Systems, United Therapeutics is gunning for FDA approval by 2028. UT's bioprinted organs begin with a scaffold derived from tobacco leaves, genetically modified to express human collagen. No animal products are involved. The printer lays down a bio-ink of induced pluripotent stem cells layer by layer with a carrier gel that enables the cells to spread and grow. Each cell somehow knows just where to go. As Pedro Mendoza, 3D Systems Director of Bioprinting, told MIT Technology Review, "When you see the complexity of the lung, what nature does from conception to birth, there is no way to machine that or mold it. 3D printing is the only way we have to create that geometry." The technology is still a work in progress. At the moment, the bioprinter can handle anatomical details down to 6 microns, about 1/4 of the width of a human hair, or the size of the smallest blood vessels in the lung. That's a tremendous advance, but the lung contains other structures as small as 1 micrometer, or even less. The organ has 23 descending branches. UT's printer has mastered 16 so far. But Martin has no doubt they'll get there. "We have a disciplined engineering approach. Every year we've doubled the number of branches. Once the how problems are solved, a ready-made lung or heart can be grown more quickly than you might guess. 48 hours for printing the scaffold, less than a month for the finished product. And the beauty of bioprinted organs," Martin points out, "is that they can be tailored for people of all ages, sizes, and shapes. If it's a little kid or even a neonate, we can print a lung that's just right." You might think that's a bold enough moonshot to crown a career, but Martin sees the world through a wider lens than most. As she told an audience of entrepreneurs at my event in Palm Beach, "No matter how much good we do in saving people's lives, if the whole planet is sick because of overheating and overpolluting, everybody's going to go down. Aviation contributes up to 5% of global warming, and that number is rising. In a single week, United Therapeutics might need 8 trips by a Learjet to deliver 4 EVLP transplants." As the business kept growing to thousands of manufactured organs, Martine saw that it would become environmentally unsustainable. So she amended her moonshot mission statement: to create an unlimited supply of transplantable organs and have them delivered with carbon-neutral aircraft. Her idea is to use a delivery fleet of electric vertical aircraft, or EVAs, helicopter-plane hybrids that fly on clean electric energy. If that sounds wildly futuristic to you, join the club. Like Martine, I'm a licensed helicopter pilot myself, and I thought there was no way anything like that could happen anytime soon. I was wrong. Martine assembled another Tiger team and entered a collaboration with Tier 1 Engineering in Southern California. In under 12 months, with less than $2 million, they created the world's first electric helicopter. By 2017, Martine's retrofitted Robinson R-44 had set a Guinness World Record for the farthest, highest, and heaviest flight of an eVTOL, electric vertical takeoff and landing air machine. United Therapeutics is partnering to build 1,000 of these Wings of Life battery-run marvels. They'll use rapid recharging pads at hospitals nationwide. On top of their tiny carbon footprint, the EVAs will be less than 1/10 as noisy as a standard helicopter. Though for now they will be piloted, the longer-term plan, subject to FAA approval, is for autonomous EVAs with a range of 250 miles. While this might sound far-fetched, Martine points out that the technology already exists. Indeed, her beta technology EVAs now fly more than 100 nautical miles a day in test flights over New England. And as this book was going to press, the proof-of-concept flight took place in September 2021, using a small multi-copter drone to transfer donor lungs from Toronto Western Hospital to Toronto General Hospital. In September 2018, the day of the autumnal equinox, Martine christened the 140,000-square-foot Unisphere, UT's newly rebuilt Maryland headquarters. Powered and heated and cooled by sustainable technologies, mainly solar and geothermal, it's the largest zero-carbon footprint building in the world. "I did all the math," Martine says. "I knew it was practical." One of her guests was a young woman with a special interest in the company. A month earlier, she'd won 2 gold medals and a silver at the Transplant Games of America, just 2 years after her double EVLP lung transplant. "It gave me chills," said Heather Leverington. "It was really kind of surreal seeing where everything happened and thinking that a part of me had been there before." What's ahead for Martine? Here's yet another amazing thing about her. No matter how busy and passionate she may be in the moment, she always has a moonshot or two on tap. Lately, she's been intrigued by the idea of digitally replicating the human life form to test new medicines at warp speed. Putting her money where her mouth is, United Therapeutics established CLIMB, the Computational Lab for In Silico Molecular Biology. Where it now takes 10 years to complete a typical clinical trial, our goal is to do 10 clinical trials in one day, Martine says. With access to a massive genomic database, we could test a digital version of a molecule in millions of human genomes in a day and get a much better safety profile than we could ever get in a clinical trial with a few thousand people. Judging from Martine's track record, it's not a matter of if CLIMB will achieve its audacious goal. It's only a matter of when. Lygenesis, hijacking lymph nodes to grow organs. We're using the body's natural lymphatic system that evolved to help us fight infection, and we're leveraging all of that brilliant biology to grow these ectopic, out-of-place organs. Michael Hufford, co-founder and CEO of Lygenesis. While Martine Rothblatt and George Church and Anthony Atala have justifiably grabbed many of the headlines, we need to tell you about three more heroic ventures that hold extraordinary promise for delivering a generation of replacement organs this decade. Let's lead off with a startup called Lygenesis. It comes to us from the University of Pittsburgh, where Eric Lagasse, PhD, the company's founder and chief scientific officer, has spent a decade learning how to repurpose a patient's own lymph nodes. He discovered that these cellular factories have the capacity to grow mini organs to either support or replace a diseased organ. The human body contains around 600 lymph nodes, aka lymph glands. What is a lymph node? It's a small organ that our immune system uses to manufacture T cells and fight off infections by trapping bacteria or viruses. That's why your lymph nodes may swell when you have a cold. They need to get larger to manufacture more immune cells. Eric Lagasse's big idea was to turn lymph nodes into bioreactors. If liver cells are injected or engrafted into a lymph node, they will grow and multiply until they form a functional, potentially life-saving mini liver. As Lygenesis CEO Michael Hufford explained to us, the company is now entering a phase 2 human clinical trial with these mini livers in patients with end-stage liver disease. The process begins with an ultrasound to graft a handful of donor liver cells into a few of the patient's lymph nodes. Within a few weeks or so, the nodes start filtering toxins from the blood. Over time, they Cinderella their way into full-fledged mini livers. Lygenesis is targeting three sets of patients. In people with partial organ failure, the mini organs and original liver would join forces in a permanent work-share arrangement. Patients closer to total failure would rely on the mini organs to buy time until their transplants came through. A smaller group, mainly children, would need just a small amount of donor liver mass to correct a congenital enzyme deficiency. The beauty of this platform is that it's low risk and low cost, Hufford explains. Animal trials show no serious adverse effects. It's also super efficient. A single donor organ can supply cells for up to 75 patients. It gives hope to thousands of patients now considered hopeless. At present, 9 of 10 people with liver disease are too sick even to make it onto the transplant list. But most of them can handle a 30-minute outpatient procedure that requires only mild sedation. What's next for Lygenesis? They're working with other organs and animals, including a mini pancreas and a mini kidney. From a health span standpoint, the most exciting of all is a mini thymus, which could make us biologically young again by rebooting our aging immune system. Growing kidneys. Then there's Eviva Medical, which aims to develop artificial kidneys, the organ in highest demand by far, as a solution to end-stage renal disease, ESRD, a condition that afflicts over 500,000 patients in the U.S. While many hang on with long-term dialysis, the only definitive treatment is a kidney transplant, where the supply is nowhere close to demand. To address this donor organ shortage, Eviva is leveraging the convergence of tissue engineering, 3D manufacturing, and stem cell biology. The company was founded by Dr. Harold Ott, a thoracic surgeon at Massachusetts General, who is best known for his work in whole organ regeneration. Back in the day, Dr. Ott perfected a method for stripping a cadaver's organ of its own cells and then infusing the scaffold that remained with fresh progenitor stem cells, which can differentiate into a variety of organs. To date, his technology has been successfully applied to heart, liver, lung, kidney, and pancreas regeneration. But for people in desperate need of a transplant, the one big drawback is time, the delay in finding a well-preserved organ from a newly deceased donor, and then the wait for the stem cells to work their magic. Dr. Ott created Eviva to remove the first of these bottlenecks by engineering a device to manufacture a scaffold. The stem cells adhere to the synthetic scaffold and create a sort of cyborg kidney. As blood flows through this biologic machine, half biology, half technology, it generates normal urine. Eviva is now led by Brock Reeve, head of the Harvard Stem Cell Institute, and is pointing toward a human clinical trial in 2023. Peter and I have both become investors through Bold Capital Partners. Dean Kamen and the Advanced Regenerative Manufacturing Institute. Our final organ regeneration hero is the legendary inventor and engineer Dean Kamen. Before describing his work in this area, I want to make sure you understand the breadth of Kamen's achievements. He is perhaps best known as the founder of the global high school robotics competition, FIRST, for inspiration and recognition of science and technology, the creator of the iBot, a futuristic wheelchair, the Segway, and the first wearable infusion pump. Kamen holds more than 1,000 patents and was awarded the National Medal of Technology by President Bill Clinton. In the last days of the Obama administration, Kamen was called to the White House and handed a challenge. As he recalls the meeting, the senior staff person told him, "There's incredible work being done in hundreds of labs throughout the U.S. We've got the potential to grow pancreatic cells, neurons, cardiac cells, and more, but no one is integrating all of it. We want to fund an organization that puts all of this science together to create a whole new industry and manufacture replacement human organs at scale." The challenge came attached with an $80 million grant from the U.S. Department of Defense and a 5-year mission to demonstrate something that worked. Kamen's first step was to organize a nonprofit organization to help him move this groundbreaking technology out of the Petri dish and into the factory. He named it the Advanced Regenerative Manufacturing Institute, ARMI. Its mission statement? To build an industrial infrastructure capable of manufacturing replacement human organs from scratch in the shortest possible time. Today, ARMI has more than 170 member organizations, ranging from top medical schools and pharmaceutical companies to industrial manufacturing control system operations. Just before COVID-19 struck the U.S., Kamen and his engineers had completed their first prototype machine, about 20 feet long. Here's how Dean describes its first demonstration. "At one end of the system, we dropped in a vial of frozen induced pluripotent stem cells, iPSCs, and then we didn't touch it again for 22 days. At the end of those 3 weeks, out the other end of this completely sealed system, came a 3-inch-long segment of freshly grown bone and ligament. The manufactured tissue was of high enough quality to repair an actual ankle or knee. But bone and ligament segments are just a hint of what is possible." So where does Dean want to take the ARMI system next? The next step, he says, is to go from iPSCs to a miniature, fully functional, beating pediatric heart in only 40 days. They'll be sized for potential transplants into infants and small children. This work recently gained significant momentum when Doris Anita Taylor, PhD, a powerhouse researcher in regenerative medicine for replacement hearts, announced that she'll be moving her entire lab from Houston, Texas, to the ARMI facility in New Hampshire. You'll hear more about her incredible work on ghost hearts in Chapter 17, How to Mend a Broken Heart. Army's goal is now to have fully functioning pediatric hearts available for clinical trial by 2024. Like Martine Rothblatt, Dean Kamen has a spectacular record of routinely making the impossible possible. So when he says, within this decade, it will be feasible to manufacture replacement human organs from scratch, I believe him. I can barely imagine anything more exciting than having access to a spare set of organs, ready and waiting for the time when our body parts eventually wear out. But as thrilling as that near-term future may be, in the next chapter, you'll meet one of the world's leading lights in immunotherapy, a field that deploys genetic engineering to weaponize our own humble T cells and turn them into heat-seeking, tumor-destroying torpedoes. He's a man who lost nearly everything, his funding, his team, the person he loved most in the world, but somehow found the courage and resilience to stay the course. I'm inspired by his example. I think you'll feel the same way. Let us share with you the inside story of this amazing breakthrough from the scientist hero who's led the charge to make it a reality. Let's learn about the mighty CAR T-cell.